Now I'm sat in the cafe at the Festival Education, and I'm sat here with the teacher of philosophy, A.C. Grayling. Good afternoon.
Hello there.
Now, I'm going to ask you some odd questions you don't often get asked, but let's just put one out there. You call yourself A.C. Grayling rather than using your Christian name. Is that a deliberate decision, or is that just...
Well, when I started to publish, and I first began to write articles for newspapers, magazines, when I was a teenager a long time ago, everybody did that. It was the standard thing.
Right.
And then my teachers at Oxford were A.J. Eyre, P.F. Strauss, and M.A.E. Dummett. So when I first, my first book, I was just A.C. Grayling.
So you felt this sort of compulsion to conform with what was the norm at the time?
Well, I didn't feel compelled. I just simply did it.
I
went to boarding schools. Yeah. At boarding schools, everybody is, you know, on the team sheet for cricket. Your surname and then your initials.
Yes, right.
It was just standard.
And you've just had a talk in the marquee. Fantastic.
But can I tell you something about using
please,
my initials?
Please
which
do.
Is that for many years, I used to write for the book page of the Financial Times. And one day the FT got a letter asking, is A.C. Grayling a man or a woman? Now, I took that as an absolute badge of honour, because it meant that there was no sexism in my writing. And since people couldn't tell from the name, you know, they had to wonder. So
right.
That's good.
And I've noticed this in the Sunday Times. There's A.A. Gill.
Yeah.
And then we've had A.A. Milne again.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Some people sometimes, I think, exploit that sort of ambiguity about the gender to see, oh, what happens, you know.
J.K. Rowling,
yes, E.D.
James.
Yes, yes, yes. Well known for that.
Yeah.
And so the next thing I was going to say was, so do you... When you mention the word philosophy or being a teacher of philosophy, do you think that people have preformed judgments when you meet them, or certain expectations that they're looking for?
Well, they assume two things, that philosophy is so difficult and complicated and recondite that they haven't got a hope of understanding it, which isn't true at all. I mean, most of the great classical writers in philosophy, right from the time of Plato, right up to Bertrand Russell, are very accessible and clear and easy to read. If you pay a bit of attention, then you can certainly get it, because they were writing for their educated, intelligent fellows in society and not for paid professors. You know, and one bad thing which has happened to philosophy in the last 100 years or so is that it has become a profession. People are paid a salary all their lives long to teach and research philosophy in university. And the result is inflation in number of syllables in words. So now you get these incomprehensible books with long words in them, like marmalade and corrugated iron and so on. Whereas if you read Hume and Descartes, you know, it's straightforward stuff. You have to pay attention, because they're developing an argument over time. But the individual sentences are not obscure.
Now, we're talking about philosophy, which maybe very succinctly or crudely put is the art of thinking. Would you agree with that? Or
Well, here's a good philosophical answer, yes and no. it is, of course, partly the art of thinking, but also the word philosophy is a bit like the word science. The word science collects a number of different
disciplines.
Physics, chemistry, and geology, and the botanical and zoological sciences, and so on. And so does the word philosophy. Philosophy comprises the theory of knowledge, metaphysics, ethics, the philosophical inquiries into the assumptions and methodologies of all the special pursuits, political philosophy, aesthetics, study of beauty and art. So there are a number of different things that happen in philosophy. Just the same way as to do science, you've got to know some chemistry and you've got to know some mathematics. In philosophy, you've got to know some theory of knowledge and you've got to know some logic. And then that helps you to pursue all the other things as well.
Now, as we've only got 1 minute left, I should have revealed earlier, I'm a teacher of computing, and there's a big debate at the moment about programming, which is something that we describe as a skill, and computational thinking, which is more of a discipline. Is computational science or computational thinking, is that something you're aware of, the study of this?
Yes, I mean, it's a part of cognitive science in general, so it's and it has a number of different facets to it, including analogies between computation as a process and the way the brain works. So it's absolutely fascinating. But yes, absolutely.
Are you aware, there's a professor, Steve Ferber, who was in computing science. They're developing a significantly huge, very powerful brain, uses something like a billion processors, and they're hoping it will replicate 1% of the power of the human brain. Does that sort of thing fascinate you?
It does.